I'm having a dilemma. You know when you think you're done with something, and then you're not? I'm having one of those moments. I've dedicated at least 2 different podcasts to the topic of remote work and working from home and office spaces, and I've even dedicated an episode of this podcast specifically to IBM's reduction of work from home access very recently. But this darn topic will not die. So this week's episode, are we doing this again? Working from home in a post-IBM world. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast, episode 74. Before we get to our main story, let's review some actual acquisitions. Yay, acquisitions! Apple has acquired an AI company called Lattice Data. They specialize in quote-unquote dark data. The company applies an AI-enabled interface engine to take unstructured, quote-unquote dark data and turn it into structured and more usable information. Sources claim that Apple paid $200 million for this acquisition. Red Hat has acquired CodeEnvy to help grow its container strategy. CodeEnvy is a company that is built on top of an open source project called Eclipse, and it fits with Red Hat's overall strategy to build commercial tools on top of open source projects. It offers a cloud-based integrated development environment, an IDE, for individual developers, teams, or enterprise. IDEs are essentially workspaces for coding, building, and testing apps. The company did not reveal purchase price. Microsoft is buying a security firm called Hexadite for $100 million. Hexadite is a relatively small company and has raised $10.5 million in funding. One of the previous investors of the company was Moshe Lichtman of Israeli Venture Partners, and Lichtman was a 10-year veteran of Microsoft, which could be the point of connection. This Hexadite acquisition would be one of a series of security acquisitions that Microsoft has made in Israel. Past deals include Oriato, Adalim, and Secure Islands. And this isn't a full company takeover, but it is an acquisition of stock. We're keeping an eye on SoftBank, and apparently they have a relatively large stake in NVIDIA worth up to $4 billion, or around 4.9% of the company. We've been covering SoftBank for the last few weeks and its newly funded Vision Fund, which has an initial commitment of $93 billion. On to our main story. Let's call this episode a sister companion to Sourcecast episode 59, Remote Possibilities. In that episode from February 16th, we covered the then-breaking news that IBM was doing away with some of their employees' remote work access. At the time, even though the press didn't do a very good job of reporting this, the majority of the employees affected by this decision were the newly acquired marketing teams. Late last year, IBM acquired a series of marketing and advertising firms in rapid succession. I think they bought 4 companies within 2 weeks. That is a tremendous amount of staff to manage and onboard into Big Blue. And I made the comment, which I still stand by today, that this decision by IBM to make those employees move to a specific office or a specific series of offices was less about synergy and communication and innovation, and more about reducing headcount in an environment where President Trump is giving them a lot of negative press for eliminating American jobs. So as I said in the podcast, IBM's decision to eliminate remote work for those employees and have them move within 30 days to one of the specific designated offices was not an innovation move, but a job elimination move. A kind of a mean one. 30 days? That's a little rough. But since that February 16th episode, IBM has expanded that elimination of remote work access. More employees have lost the right to work from home, and it has received a lot of press. So that's what I want to focus on. For the last decade, IBM has enjoyed the benefit of reduced real estate costs by keeping their employees home or sending them out to customer offices. And when companies build such a dramatic strategy around that kind of work from home policy, bringing people back into the office can be somewhat chaotic. Let me explain. Real estate is not cheap, especially in the offices and markets that IBM operates from. They're not in some podunk little suburb. I can list all the offices like New York and San Francisco and Chicago, but IBM has a lot of employees and they have a lot of real estate. They've managed to keep those costs down by keeping people home. As they start to bring them back in, where are they going to put all these people? This is a company that has shown 20 straight quarters of decline. This is a company that has invested profits in stock buyback. Are they going to take their available cash and invest it in real estate? Not so fast. IBM has been partnering with WeWorks, And they're sending employees to WeWork offices, and they're providing, I guess, corporate subscriptions, so employees can go to those offices to work and collaborate. WeWork also has primetime New York real estate, and they're in almost every major city. So that takes me to the concept of the open office. I'm not going to be shy about it. I am not a big open office fan. I've worked in open offices before, and I always say this, and I will continue to say this whenever I bring up the topic. If you're someone who codes and is relatively quiet all day, and you work around people who are also doing coding or web development or something where you could just be in front of a computer and be quiet, the idea of an open office bench system, it's endearing. You can quietly turn to your coworker, ask them a question, get some immediate feedback. It's quote unquote very collaborative. But if you're in a situation where you're on the phone all day, taking meetings, teleconferences, if you're in strategic sourcing and you are negotiating terms of sensitive contracts or relationships with suppliers, an open office environment is treacherous. You're annoying your coworkers because you're making noise while they're on the phone. They're annoying you because they're making noise while you're on the phone. And a lot of these open office systems, like WeWorks, they have private areas where you can go to, but they were never intended to be used all day. And in some situations, you need to use them all day. But don't take my word for it. In an interview with The Memo, Twitter's vice president of Europe has claimed that the glorious open office plan is dead. Said VP Bruce Daisley has stated, "The arrival of interruptions is the most destructive thing in our working lives. But open office plans are just full of interruptions. There are two reasons why offices are open plan. One is that we rip down the walls of hierarchy, but two is because it's a lot cheaper. We can fit lots of people in an open plan." There's a BBC article that quotes a 2014 study that found employees are 15% less productive in open office workspaces. Employees have trouble concentrating and are twice as likely to get sick with no walls to stop the spread of cough and illness. I can sit here and find dozens of articles that justify my point, and someone else can find dozens of articles that justify that open offices do increase productivity. Personally, give me a phone booth. Lock me in a tiny glass room. As long as I can see out and no one can hear me, I'm super happy. Getting back to IBM, there's a Forbes article that kind of destroys IBM's entire reason for bringing people back into the office. The Forbes article by Jeff Boss goes on to say, IBM is calling for remote workers to stop working remotely and come back into the office. The thinking behind this move is to create greater moments of serendipity. In other words, the more frequent employees interact, the more likely they are to generate new conversations, which leads to new insights, which increases business momentum. But the key word here is likely. The Forbes article basically says that this strategy is just a shot in the dark. Jeff Boss puts the nail in the coffin by saying, "But that's not what's going to happen with the current approach, because restructuring just offers more of the same. Granted, nothing beats face-to-face communication. However, nothing beats high employee morale either. An unhappy employee is soon to be a flight risk, and likely a future champion against working there. The problem with restructuring is that it offers immediate feedback because leaders feel like there's momentum. Unfortunately, the move is just smoke and mirrors. It's an illusion that they've made progress when all they've really done is shuffle people around into different boxes. They haven't changed behavior, which is their real intention." That was I'm not really sure why this topic resonates with me so much. I think it's good to mix things up. It's good to work remotely and quietly when you need those days. It's nice to get into the office and interact with your comrades, bounce some ideas off each other, and then kind of go back into your little foxhole, work those ideas around, take them back out, share them with the others, go back in, rework them, etc., etc. Trying to create or find an ideal workplace, it's like trying to find Atlantis. You're never going to find it. It's never going to be perfect because every day you're a moving target. The thing that motivates you today, the thing that gives you energy, that gives you innovation and ideas, that may not work tomorrow. Companies have to create environments where you're free to follow your creativity, your innovation, your passion, and not, to quote those articles, put you in a box. It's not about working from home. It's about flexibility. And flexibility is good for the employee, and flexibility is good for the employer, especially if you want employees to work late at night or early in the morning taking phone calls from foreign countries. Flexibility. Doesn't matter if it's work from home, or work away from your desk, or work outside next to the trees. Whatever gets the job done. A wise man once said, "Don't let perfection be the enemy of the good." And that's all we have for this week. As a reminder, you can find SourceCast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. SourceCast is recorded in bucolic Mantua, New Jersey, and is produced and recorded by me. Music is provided by Google. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.